big storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd. Ready or not, the 2024 clay court season has now officially begun. We have five tour-level events on the calendar this week, all of them being played on the dirt, all of them promising to deliver fascinating tennis for us to follow. On today's show, I want to try to make your life a little bit easier as a tennis fan. I want to set the scene at each of our events, offer up what I see as the biggest storylines at each of them as well, so that you know what to watch for. It starts with our one signature event of the week. It's a WTA 500 level event happening in Charleston, South Carolina. And while that Charleston event is really the only event we see played on green clay throughout the course of the entirety of a WTA season, it's an event that has drawn some of the best tennis players in the world. There are 16 top 34 players. Let me say that again, because I know it's an arbitrary cutoff point, but 16 top 34 players, the sorts of players that are always competing to be seeded at major events, you've got 16 of them in the draw this week in Charleston. Three top 10ers in Jessica Pegula, Maria Sakkari, and Ons Jabeur. You've got four of the top five Americans in the world as well in Pegula, Collins, Navarro, and Madison Keys. So right off the bat, surface level, so many different compelling storylines for us to get into. Of course, as you dive further into the draw, you look at players who are off to strong starts, like a Diana Yastremska, like, dare I say, a Leila Fernandez, who I think has played really well for about 6 months now. Players on the other end of the spectrum, I'm really thinking about a Veronika Kudermetova, who really needs to get her season started this week in Charleston. Again, a little bit of a spoiler alert there, but I want to break down that Charleston draw. I want to talk about what I still think is a pretty fun undercard event in Bogota. You've got players like top seed Marie Bojkova in the draw, second seed to Tatiana Maria, Sarah Cerebez Tormo, a player like Cami Osorio, who has always had success at her home event, and so much more. A lot to get into on our WTA Tour level side of things. And then, of course, we've got three 250s on the men's side. It starts with the ATP 250 in Estoril, which, dare I say, probably has our highest quality field, of course. A large part of that is due to the quality of our top seeds at the event, none of whom have gotten started. But Casper Ruud, Lorenzo Musetti, Hubi Hurkacz, your top three seeds. I forget who the number four seed was. I think it was Tommy Paul, but no, Tommy was in Houston. I don't remember who it was, but the number four seed has pulled out of the event. Still some fun first-round matchups and results for us to get into. Dominic Thiem winning his match in three. Nuno Borges, I believe, was either match point. Certainly was down big to Luca Puy before coming back there. Want to set the scene in Estoril, talk about what to look for. Marrakesh, probably my least favorite of the three draws, but that doesn't mean I dislike the draw in Marrakesh. A bunch of first-round matches already in the books. In fact, I think our first round in Marrakesh is now entirely concluded, so we can set up the round of 16. And then, look, it's an ATP event in Houston. I can always find fun storylines there, whether it's Shelton and the start to his clay court season. Can he make a big jump forward? If he can, the rankings runway is there for him to make a legitimate top 10 push as we approach the massive block of points he has to defend at the U.S. Open. He's the top seed in Houston. Crazy thing to say out loud, but again, whether it's a guy like Shelton, Cerundolo, Echeverry, Tiafo needs to get things going, doesn't he, to start his season? And this is an event I believe he won last year, so the reigning champ, a lot of fun there. Some fun first-round upsets as well for us to discuss. Some other fun matchups on the horizon. So again, we'll get into all three of our 250 events, talk pretty briefly about the 125K on the WTA side, although I believe our top four seeds at the WTA 125K event were all knocked out in round number one. I know we've got four challengers on the calendar this week as well. I'll save covering that level to our dear friend and contributor Damian Kust, who of course covers the Challenger Tour every Monday over on the Great Shot podcast feed. But again, today's episode should serve as a primer for what to watch for throughout the course of another busy week on the WTA and ATP tours. Of course, the reason we want to set the scene week in, week out is because of the support we get from all of you listeners. We know you trust us to keep you the most well-informed, best-educated fans in the business. We take that obligation seriously. That's why I'm trying to get back to a more steady schedule here on this mini-break podcast. podcast, trying to find a routine that will allow me to record at least 5 episodes a week, because that's the sort of coverage that I know you fans deserve. And by the way, coming up this week, these episodes already planned, we will have First Third Reviews with Jeff Sackman, David Kane. So be on the lookout for those podcasts to drop on the Mini Break podcast feed later this week. Of course, if you're looking for our coverage of other things happening in the non-tour level in the tennis world, head on over to the Great Shot podcast feed, Cracked Interviews podcast feed. Of course, on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel, not only do we broadcast Big Ten Conference college tennis every Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights, we recap everything happening in the Division I world on our Deciding Point shows. Of course, you can go listen to those on the Great Shot podcast feed the next day as well. That's what's up for us content-wise. Of course, broadcast Thursday, Friday, Sunday, debuting and broadcasting all sorts of college tennis on ESPN Plus as well. A shout out to all of you Cracked Rackets fans, without whom we would not have the opportunities we have today. We appreciate all of you who have already tuned in, and we ask you to keep doing so as well. Of course, a shout out also to the support we get from our friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. All right, let's talk this week at the WTA and ATP tour level. April now officially underway. That means the start of the clay court season. And I always think it's funny, again, that we start on the green clay in Charleston and that it is a 500-level event, that it does draw so many of the best players in the world. Part of that, of course, is its proximity to Miami, the convenience of going to play a significant level, tour-level event that's so reasonable in travel distance. Charleston, beautiful this time of year as well, right on the bay. I know Ben Navarro spares no expense in ensuring those players have a first-class experience, so obviously that certainly helps. But, you know, again, 16 top 34 players in the draw. I think the storylines write themselves pretty simply. Now, just to recap some of the biggest results we saw in round number one, I thought certainly most significantly Danielle Collins, who the Miami Open champion, extends her winning streak to, what, an eighth consecutive match now? Or I think eighth consecutive match, because she had to play a round of 128, right? At Miami, yeah, she did. So she won 7 there, now 1 here in Charleston. Quick math, folks. 7 plus 1 is 8. I still got it. But 1-4 over Paula Badosa, it just speaks to her level of aggression. When she's confident, when she's moving well, when she's fit, when she's feeling the ball so squarely in the center of her racket, she's always had this sort of tier one firepower. Danielle Collins has always been a disruptor in every draw she's present in, and there's a reason Tennis Abstract has her as, wow, a 34.1%. She's an underdog tomorrow against Ons Jabeur. I imagine betting markets would disagree with that. Now, I don't really care what the betting markets say, but I strongly disagree with Tennis Abstract there. I know Ons Jabeur has had all sorts of success, not just on clay courts more broadly, but certainly in Charleston specifically, where, reminder, she made the final of Charleston in 2022. She won this event last season as well. So that would make sense then why she would be a favorite here in Charleston. But certainly you look at form to start 2024. You look for Danielle Collins overall this year. Obviously, a remarkable run for her in Miami is going to inflate every stat. But even you want to remove those 7 wins, fine. She's 14-7 outside of Miami this year. Still would be qualifying for the two-thirds rule. I officially have updated the top 25 clubs, and we'll get to that more at the end, because right now some of the statistics are wonky. But Danielle Collins, 1 of 8 players to rank top 20 in both hold and break percentage right now. Ons Jabeur, not going to be a shock to learn, she is not on that list. Danielle Collins, her firepower against an Ons Jabeur, who you look for her start to 2024, Jabeur right now overall, and I know she hasn't been healthy, but she's 2-5 overall so far this season. Yeah, she's back on a surface where she has more time, a surface that should be a little bit less daunting on her physically, the way pounding on the cement and pavement of hard courts can be. But man, it's another dangerous first round match. It's a first match for Ons Jabeur, second round match overall. How is that not the prohibitive storyline? Like, with all due respect to big picture things, I know I try to take a 10,000-foot view when looking at these, but Ons Jabeur needs to get things started. Pegula got things started in Miami. Sakkari got things started at Indian Wells. Again, dare I say, the 2020 rising stars of the COVID era. And I hate framing it like that, but you know what I mean. Like, from 2020, post-pandemic, play resumes in August. I don't want to mean post-pandemic, but pandemic has started. Play resumes in August. From there to the start of the season, Jabeur, Pegula, Sakkari have risen their profiles as much as any player, not name, you know, again, any of the non-top fours, Iga, Sabalenka, Goff, Rybakina, like they have risen their profile as much as anyone outside of those top four players. And all of them, it's been a really slow start to 2024. Again, Sakkari nailed the sunshine swing. Pegula seemed to get the momentum, the juju flowing for her in Miami. And by the way, she's the top seed this week. And we mentioned last week her, it was a prove it match for Jessica Pegula last week against Emma Navarro, an All-American match. Again, Pegula has been supplanted as the top-ranked American, but to be supplanted by Coco Gauff is one thing. To lose a match to Emma Navarro, I know, you know, Emma's obviously been the better player to start 2024. We know that because we're the most well-educated, best fans in the business here on the mini break, but the significance of a loss like that. Again, we broke it down at length last week, so I'm not going to repeat myself here, but it's a very similar scenario for Jessica Pegula. She takes on the always dangerous Amanda Anisimova. And look, when Anisimova's healthy, she plays top 25 tennis. Obviously, we saw her make the round of 16 in Australia. Now, we haven't seen her play since, other than her 6-3, 6-love victory, where she wasn't broken against Alize Cornet. But talk about the perfect opponent for Anisimova, a player who will give her all sorts of time to work her weapons accordingly. And she could just tee off on second serves. Obviously, there's a little more chutzpah behind everything Jessica Pegula does. Those are two massive first-round matches because, again, for both players, Pegula, but Jabeur in particular, because her upset feels more likely given Collins' 2-1 overall in the head-to-head, given Collins' recent run of form, even if it's a lot of tennis on her body over the course of the start of the year. A lot of tennis, not just on her body, anybody, by the way, not just someone who has obviously had the health issues Danielle Collins has had. Jabeur's got to get things going. You know, that's a must-watch match, I would argue. I think Pegula versus Anisimova, another must-watch match you would throw on the list. And for both players, look, the Jessica Pegula section is tricky. First, it's big-hitting Amanda Anisimova. She gets through that. It could be a date with another big hitter in Diana Yastremska. That's before you even start to talk about a quarterfinal where, by seed, a date with a very much in-form Ekaterina Alexandrova, a very much in-form Victoria Azarenka might be looting. This is not an easy draw for Jessica Pegula. If she gets to the semifinals between this run, a Miami Open run, I think now she can head into this Europe red clay stretch thinking, you know what? I have steadied the ship. You know what? I'm back to being, if not a top five player, certainly back in a top eight World Tour Finals conversation, which is ultimately the tier you just want to be in because that is the outskirts, if not the inner circle. You look on the Jabeur side of things. I mean, she'd get through Collins. Ugh, she'd face the winner of Stevens Fernandez. That wouldn't be easy. After that, Gracheva, Mertens, Seville, Svitolina. Again, you don't see an overwhelming weapon in that group, but obviously Svitolina has played really good ball for 6 months consecutively since returning to the tour. So the Pegula pathway to the semifinals is harder. I also think her level is just higher than Ons Jabeur's right now. So again, it's something to monitor. It is worth noting right now, Jabeur is the favorite according to Tennis Abstract, 14.2% chance of winning the title. Pegula literally right behind her, 14.1% chance. After that, you'd go to the 10% chance, a 10.1% chance of Maria Sakkari, 10% chance of fourth seed Daria Kasatkina, looking at each of their quarters of the draw. If it's the Maria Sakkari we saw of the Sunshine Swing, and it's a different surface, I don't know her love of green clay, but certainly, again, things get a little bit weirder. Everything, it just is a little bit different. That said, Tomova round one, Sorenko's her immediate seed in the section, and then a potential Haddad-Maya-Kudermetova quarterfinal matchup. I think Veronika Kudermetova has to get things going. You look for Kudermetova. It's her worst first third of a season, probably, since you go back to 2020. You just look at what she has, or dare I say hasn't, accomplished yet this year. She's 4-8. Overall in the year. So I know she maybe hasn't been her healthiest, but she's played. Like first round loss Australia, first round loss Miami, first round loss Abu Dhabi, first round loss Indian Wells. Now, you didn't hear me mention her first round loss in Doha. That was to Danielle Collins. But who have the losses been to? Kerber, Watson, Golubic, Wang Xinyu. Like just not players she was losing to over the course of the last 3 years. And so, you know, again, 33-24 in 2021, 39-20 in 2022, still 34-22 last year. It's a 3-year run where she's been 60% win percentage or over. Is that 3-year run for Kudermetova, I don't want to say coming to an end, but has the 26-year-old, dare I say, been supplanted by some of the other extraordinary talents we see on the WTA Tour right now? If she doesn't get things going, certainly she will be a victim of falling into the rankings. You look for her last year, her clay court success. She goes semifinals Madrid, semifinals Rome. Now, she lost first round Roland Garros, so there are some easy points to pick up there, but then a finals in Den Bosch as well. This European natural surface stretch, it's one that could see Kudermetova fall outside the top 40 if she doesn't regain her level here. And Charleston, obviously, a massive opportunity for her to do so. So certainly she's the player to watch outside of Maria Sakkari, who I do think will get to the semifinals. I'm starting to buy back some stock in Maria Sakkari, which oftentimes is when you can get in trouble. And then the Kasatkina section is fascinating in the sense that there are a lot of players playing really well in it. Kasatkina, Navarro, Madison Keys, who's been serving lights out since making her return to court. Caroline Wozniacki, who's got Angelina Kalinina, a rematch from Miami, a matchup that went three sets in Kalinina's way. Again, 16 top 34 players in Charleston this week. You can look any way you turn. I do think the top two seeds, wow, very mainstream, unlike me. But it has to be the case. The top two seeds, Pegula, Jabeur, they've got more pressure on them than anyone else in the draw just because they need to get things going. And then Kudermetova, the clear-cut third option there, just again, given the points she'll have to defend coming up and given the lack of form we've seen from her to start the year. But again, Pegula, 14.1% favorite. Jabeur, 14.2%. Sakkari, 10.1%. Kasatkina, 10%. They're saying it's a very wide-open ball game in Charleston, and that makes sense given how tough the pathways are for just about anyone who wants to make a run at this 500-level green clay event this week. That is your signature event, I would say, happening in the pro tennis world. You still have some really good 250s, though. Let's move over to the men's side now to talk about probably my favorite men's event of the week. That's the ATP. Well, that's happening at the collegiate level, but I'm not going to bore you with some of the fantastic matchups happening this week. Texas at Oklahoma, a little Red River rivalry, certainly going to matter in the college tennis world after Oklahoma knocked off TCU. But I think everyone can get excited about Estrel when you look at the top three seeds: Casper Ruud, Hubi Hurkacz, Lorenzo Musetti, two of them top 12 players, the other a top 25er, and back on his best surface. Certainly had some round one drama. I know they got rained out here on Tuesday, but Nuno Borges drops the opening set 6-love on his way to a love 6-7-6-6-3 victory over Luca Pui. Now, some of you may not have listened to my 20-minute interview with Nuno, which you can go here right now on the Cracked Interviews podcast. You can also go watch it on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel. To listen to Nuno, I'm going to say, wax poetically about the opportunity to play in front of a home crowd in Portugal, about what it means to have won that Estoril title, about his meeting with the president because of it. What a special moment for Nuno to get that sort of win in front of that sort of crowd when things were going so horribly wrong. And look, of course, Nuno Borges should be beating Luca Pui in round one of this event. He lost the first set 6-love. And again, all signs were pointing in the opposite direction. What a grind from Nuno to work his way back. You know, similarly, much needed win for Dominic Thiem to start to get some mojo going here in 2024. You look for Thiem so far this year. You know, again, played a couple of challengers since the end of the Australian Open, but haven't seen him at the tour level until this week. It's a three-set win over a big-hitting lefty in Max Martyr that, yeah, on this surface, you would expect him to win. Certainly vintage Thiem you'd expect to win, but a lefty always can give Dominic Thiem some trouble. And, you know, Martyr had his moments in set number two, but just wasn't consistent enough down the home stretch. Thiem was moving well. Bo was pretty explosive, although, again, just the bouts of inconsistency are there that obviously they weren't there many moons ago. Still, good win for Thiem. Big win for RBA. He's never been the most comfortable on clay to knock out Kecmanovic 1-5. He started to play some, dare I say, top 80 tennis once again. I'm not going to say top 50, but top 80 tennis he's starting to get closer towards once again as he tries to just stay in the mix down the home stretch of his career. But look, they got rained out on Tuesday, so a lot of first-round matches still to come. You've got fifth-seeded Arthur Fee, who, one of the bigger disappointments, I would argue, of the first third of 2024, especially, like, you just look 9-8 overall. Quarterfinals Hong Kong, loses in 3 to Rublev. Semifinals Auckland. he got some excited, right? It felt like the buzz was building. Then loses second round, albeit to a seed in Griekspoor, Australia. Goes and plays a South American swing. Makes just one quarterfinal there in Santiago. Beats Davidovich Fokina Indian Wells fine, but loses round three. Loses first round to Arnaldi in straights in Miami. Like 9-8 overall. This is a guy I thought might be flirting with top 15, top 12 status by the end of this year. I was that impressed with the level, the physicality, the skill set, all these different, the way he competes, all these different things. And hasn't been there yet. Now he's got a little bit more time now on these clay courts for that big winding forehand, and I do think this is the surface he will be most dangerous on throughout his career. The combination of physicality, heaviness of ball, again, creativity, etc. Time to get things going this week. He's got a big opportunity, although he'll face a hostile crowd in what is, again, the farewell tour for João Sousa, who has accomplished as much as just about any Portuguese male tennis player in history. So that's a fun little subplot to watch, but if I was going to get amped about anyone in this Estoril draw, it's not top seed Casper Ruud, who I think has been a top eight guy to start this year. Hurkacz, if he can get a big clay court result, he's flirting with top eight status right now as well. Those are the easy storylines. Let's get old school or back to my roots. If you're not on the João Fonseca hype train yet, just get yourself a seat. Like, you can buy one in the passenger cabin. You don't have to buy the expensive first class ticket yet to Fonseca if you still need a little bit more time and need to analyze a little bit more data yourself, need a few more data points just offered up, but the 18-year-old just has it. Like, just, the 17-year-old, who's 288 in the world, just made his first Challenger final, I believe, yeah, at the end of March as well. Guy just fires bazoo. Again, it's kind of Sinner-esque on his backhand wing. There's just a lot of things I like about this former junior U.S. Open champion who has made the decision not to attend Virginia, but instead turn pro, which you can understand. He quarterfinals of 500 in Rio in February, now made his first Challenger final. He's into the top 300. I'm sure the sponsors, the financial support, it's all there for the Brazilian. It should be. He's got a very winnable first-round matchup, in my opinion, does Fonseca, who gets a wild card into this event. He is going to take on Jan Chwinski, the qualifier from Great Britain. He gets through that one. Who does Fonseca get in round number two? A date with Hubi Hurkacz. That becomes must-watch television, a match certainly we will discuss at some point, if it happens here on this show. But that's the subplot, is every Fonseca match you have an opportunity to watch, you should, because I do think over the next 15 years, we're going to get a lot of Fonseca in our lives, and it's always fun to be at the front end of something like that. So again, buy the train ticket while it's cheap and hop on board, because I'm telling you, the Fonseca pathway is about to get off and running. That's everything in Estoril. Not a surprise to see Casper Ruud, the significant favorite, 37.8%. He would be my significant favorite to win the event as well. After that, 19.1%, Hubi, 11.4%, Musetti. Dom Kofer, the former number one player in the country in college, former Tulane All-American, he's got a 7.9% chance. That just speaks to how many matches he's freaking won over the course of the last 12 months and how much Tennis Abstract respects that winning percentage. Let's see, what is his last 52 record? The 29-year-old Dom Kofer, 46-22 over his last 52. You want to look tour level specifically, 15-12. Yeah, he's playing like a top 50 player. That's why he's flirting with his career high and reached his career high of number 49 to start March. That's the action over in Estoril on the Marrakesh side of things. I believe our second round is now indeed set. In fact, that is the case. And, you know, looking at round number one, no earth-shattering upsets. Certainly most significant, number six seed Alexander Shevchenko knocked out. But who beat him? It's a Matteo Berrettini who's starting to look like himself. I mean, when Berrettini's healthy, he always looks like himself, because his serve, his forehand, they're such significant weapons that if he's healthy and moving at even 85% of full capacity, he's just able to dictate with those weapons so overwhelmingly. And that's precisely what he did against Shevchenko, who, just the way Shevchenko plays that ball, a little wristy or a little closer to the body, he was overwhelmed by everything Berrettini threw at him. So that's a significant victory to open up the section for Berrettini. He's the favorite to win the event, 25.8% entering the round of 16. Now, again, six of your top eight seeds all still alive. Jura, Ofner, Evans, Sonego, who are your top four, they're all still around. Seventh-seeded Mariano Navone, eighth-seeded Flavio Caboli still around as well. Fifth-seeded Facundo Diaz Acosta knocked out by the American Nicolas Moreno de Alboron, a former UCSB Gacho, which is a college tennis program. Shout out to Moreno de Alboron. He's got a date with qualifier David Goffin in the round of 16 with a spot in his first, perhaps, tour-level quarterfinal on the line. Big win for Alex Vukic on the clays. He tries to consolidate a top 50 spot. It's the surface he hasn't always been the most comfortable with, but I talked about him with that in our interview from Phoenix, as well as an interview you can go listen to on the Cracked Interviews podcast. Eventually, hopefully, you'll be able to see it on our YouTube channel, but that's a big win for Vuki, a guy we're always rooting for, certainly. And so, again, good to see him get a win. Big win for the young Italian Caboli over the talented Abdullah Shelby as well. Yeah, I mean, again, looking at this draw moving forward, the biggest storyline is the Berrettini comeback, because if Matteo Berrettini is healthy and playing his best tennis again, we know that best tennis is top eight tennis. And it does feel like, again, after that top four, yeah, Zverev is the five, but there's a big gap between fourth, who's ever the fourth best player in the world, Djokovic, Sinner, Alcaraz, Medvedev in any given moment, and Zverev at five. And then after that, Rublev, Ruud, Hurkacz, Dimitrov. Like, that is not an impenetrable group for a guy like Matteo Berrettini. And despite those overwhelming weapons, you'd think, oh, he's in the Wimbledon final on his resume. You think, oh, he must be just a quick surface guy. No, that's not the case for Matteo Berrettini. He's always been a really good clay court player as well. You try dealing with the heaviness of his weapons on that surface. He's the storyline to watch. Good win, by the way, in round one from Howie Munar over Luka von Asche Munar. If he's going to be a top 50 guy ever, he's got to kill these next couple of months of the calendar. So that's your action in Marrakesh on the WTA Bogota side of things. Again, still very early in the action at that 250. We, I believe, see Tatiana Maria playing today. I think a bunch of the seeds are going to be in action later today. But, you know, again, as we look right now at round number one and certainly look at getting into this event, how Marie Boshkova ultimately fares here on the clay court. She's had a slower start to her season, but opportunity, obviously, with so many of the top players in the world in Charleston to maybe make a move on the red clay here this week. A winner so far in round number one, Cami Osorio, straight set winner. Sarah Cerebes Tormo knocks off the rising Maria Timofeeva in straight sets. I mean, Sarah Cerebes Tormo on this clay, God, it would that be just such a freaking nightmare to deal with mentally, because you just know she is never going to go away in this elevation. And again, how did the top seeds fare here this week? What am I watching most closely? Probably Hayley Baptiste, the young American. I do think she should end this season as a top 100 player. She's got an interesting first-round test against, I believe, a former Bogota champion in Tamara Zidanczyk. Did Tamara Zidanczyk? It was either champion or final. I remember she played that marathon final, which she lost to Cami Osorio in 2021. 5-7, 6-3, 6-4, 2 hours, 48 minutes. See, the brain still kind of works, but she ended up losing that final. Still, former finalist at this event will take on the talented Baptiste. I mean, who needs a big week this week? Boshkova, sure. Nadia Podoroska, former French Open semifinalist, back on the red clay. She's back in the top 100. Dangerous, certainly not a player I would want to see in an early round of a big event on this surface, just given, again, what a nightmare she is to deal with physically as well. Still very early, though, in the action in Bogota, so we'll have to see how it all plays out. Right now, the favorite, according to the Tennis Abstract singles forecast, Cami Osorio at 19%, Cerebes Tormo 13.7%, Podoroska 11-1. Boshkova is lower on that list than that, but still, that no one's over a 20% favorite, it speaks to Tennis Abstract's kind of like, I don't know, we'll see how things shake out moving forward as we look at that draw. And then last but not least, at the tour level, we've got the ATP 250 in Houston. I've said this maybe 100 times since the start of the year, but you look for Ben Shelton, still 32 and 26 overall over his last 52 weeks. What points does he have to defend the rest of the way? He won one match in before the U.S. Open. He won one match in Estoril, one match in Barcelona, one match at Queen's Club, one match at Wimbledon. That's before the start of the North American hardcourt swing again. So he's got four tour-level wins and a challenger semifinal to defend. He's the top seed this week. He wins his first-round match in Houston. He's through to the quarterfinals. He makes a final run here this week in Houston, or, you know, again, somehow manages to find his way to winning the title in Houston. That's a free 250 points for Ben Shelton, and pretty much means the rest of the way until the start of the North American Hardcourt Swing, he's playing for free. He's adding points to his resume. And right now, Ben Shelton, 2,250 points. That trails number 10 Casper Ruud by about 1,200 points. There's a lot more than 1,200 points between now and the start of the North American Hardcourt Swing. And again, Shelton has to defend maybe 300 points the rest of the way versus all the guys in front of him. Tsitsipas, who has so much to defend. Casper has a bunch to defend. All the guys. Holger Rune, so much to defend over the next 6 months. Just like there's a runway there for Ben Shelton. And again, with how much kick and how heavy he hits everything, his serve, how he takes space, how fluid he is, I think there's a really good clay court player in there somewhere. The more time on the return of serve for him to take a little bit cleaner cut there, I'm fascinated to see his development. He's going to be pushed in match number one, taking on the weapons of Zizou Bergs, but that's going to be really fun. Big round one win, by the way, for Brandon Nakashima, who is just firmly back inside the top 100. Nakashima up to number 87 with his win. First round over Ajakovic. How about Rinki Hijikata, the former UNC standout player? Again, consolidating his top 100 position. He gets his first tour level clay court victory, 6-6. He knocks out fifth seeded Chris Eubanks. You know, JJ Wolf, much needed first round win over qualifier, former UVA All American Alex Richard. Luciano Darderi, the young Italian, he continues his strong start to 2024. Another tour level win, this time three sets over Dennis Kudla. By the way, we get the return of Wu Yibing, who, what, he won the Dallas event 2 years ago, I want to say, obviously has dealt with a bunch of different injuries, but is capable of playing top 25 tennis, maybe even better than that when he is healthy and playing his best. So qualifier into this event, excited to see him get his season really going here against Jordan Thompson in round number one. Also, you like ball striking. How about Kovacevic Kokkinakis in round number one? That's something I can get excited about. Right now, the favorite's third-seeded Francis Tiafoe. And again, I do think coming out of the first third of the year, you look for Tiafoe, who to start this 2024 season now 7-7. Overall, semifinal in Delray, quarterfinal in Dallas, quarterfinal Hong Kong, lost second round Australian Open, first match Miami, second match Indian Wells, albeit to Tsitsipas. I think Tiafoe expected more than 7-7, certainly. And again, he's the defending champion here in Houston, having won this event last season, which I believe was his first clay court title. Indeed, that was the case. Yeah, look, I mean, again, if there's anywhere for him to get things going, it's as he's defending a title here in Houston. So he's the favorite right now, according to Tennis Abstract, 20.9%. After that, you've got Tomas Martin Echeverry, who Tiafoe beat in the final last year. He's at 14.9%. Cerundolo, who's always up and down, 13.2%. Top seed Ben Shelton, just a 4.5%. That's worse than Zizou Bergs, who he's an underdog against, according to the Tennis Abstract singles forecast. Nakashima, Kokkinakis, Denis Shapovalov, a wild card into this event, who's got a really fun round one match with Marcos Giron. They're all expected to do better, according to the numbers, than Ben Shelton. We'll see if Ben can disappoint and disrupt those numbers with another strong performance, as he always seems to do here early to start his career. That's all your tour-level action. Again, we've got four ATP challengers and a WTA 125K happening this week as well at your 125K in Spain. Top seeds Rietmanen, Ossian Doden, Bai Jiao Xuan, Harriet Dart, your top four seeds. They were all eliminated, four of eight seeds eliminated in round number one, thus entering the round of 16. Who's the favorite? It's Olga Danilovic, 17% chance after that. It's Jessica Buzas Maniero, who, I'm going to be honest, I don't know the most about. Maniero, currently 21 years old, the number 100 ranked player in the world. Welcome to the top 100 debut after she wins a match. I got to start watching the 21-year-old Spaniard. It's a rare moment for me where I don't know who the second favorite player is in a WTA 125K. I usually pride myself at being better than that, and I could lie to you listeners and say I do know who she is, but that's put her on the list. 21-year-old, top 100 player to watch this week. Also, if you haven't already watched Maria Carla, the Argentinian, who I believe is 23 years old. Now she's another player, recent made a top 100 debut, just to keep an eye on. Big opportunity for them at the 125K this week. Four challengers again, haven't dove head first into yet. Right now, your favorites according to the Tennis Abstract singles forecast at each of them. We'll just go through that quickly. In Florianopolis, Camilo Ugo Carabelli, 27.9%. In Barcelona, Radu Elba, 26.1%. Barletta challenger, Benjamin Bonzi, 23.2%. Then the one they say is the most up in the air, Mexico City challenger, where Alessandro Giannessi, just a 13.6% favorite. So at this point of the week, that's them saying, yeah, we got no idea who's taking the title there. Of course, who will answer that question? Who will take those titles? That's something we can monitor all week long here on this show. Again, I will continue to keep an eye on week one of this 2024 clay court season. But your friendly reminder, we got to do some first third year in review content here this week on this show. Talk about the biggest takeaways from the first 3 months of play in the men's, women's games. What did we learn? What are we still curious about moving forward? Those will be the themes of episodes coming up later this week with Jeff Sackman, David Kane. So be on the lookout for those podcasts and so much more across our Cracked Rackets network of podcasts. Of course, the reason, by the way, we can provide all of that content is because of the tireless efforts of our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, who, as always, has a of an editing job to do day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout out to him. A shout out as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products in the tennis world. With that said, for our fantastic super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, and all of us at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say. That's the break. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.